Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary, and this is Owen Tracy recording at 2:12 Pacific Summer Time, or Standard Time, excuse me, and today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, this has really been an exciting week, and not least today, where I guess we had a little bit of excitement at the beginning of the year because there was speculation that China's first corporate debt default was going to occur, but that was just before the Chinese New Year holiday, and also that product had been sold to private banking clients in Beijing, wealthy private banking clients in Beijing, which can probably be approximated with a synonym for Communist Party officials. So they were made whole in that they missed some coupon payments, but they got their principal back. But what we were saying at the time is that it really was only a matter of time before we got a default because the situation is unsustainable. Well, that's what we had today. A solar company has been allowed to go bust. You know, well, that's probably too extreme, but it as of today, it's missed its coupon payment, and it is unlikely to be able to pay it. So the likelihood of a default, well, technically that is a default, and with over $600 billion of maturing debt in 2014, that's a sizable chunk of change to refinance, and there are going to be some that are just simply not going to be able to refinance, and that means that we are going to see additional defaults. Well, when we look at the Chinese market, then valuations are very low. You have the banking sector in particular trading on really very low PE ratios. Now, quite what that represents is probably open to interpretation. On a very superficial view, you could say that it represents value. But we just don't know. And that's the reason why you haven't had a slew of investor interest in such high-yielding and low PE shares. People just do not know what the scale of the problem is. So we are going to see in the next few months to what extent the number of defaults rises and just how much the banks are going to be impacted. When you look at just where those valuations are, then a worst-case scenario has probably been priced in. You look at the price charts, and we're really not that far away from the 2008 lows. We have already seen a good deal of the bad news priced in. In the event that the situation turns out to be slightly more benign than the worst-case scenario, then there is potential for these shares to rally from here. But in order to justify making that call, we're going to have to see some evidence of support building. And as of yet, there isn't very much of that. What we have seen today is that the Chinese stock market was reasonably quiet. But that's not to say that there weren't knock-on effects. Perhaps the most acute of those was on the renminbi. Well, the renminbi had weakened really quite abruptly last week, retraced much of the decline this week, but posted a downside Q reversal in here today. So that would suggest that the dollar has found a higher reaction low against the renminbi, and that the January lows for the dollar down around 6 renminbi to the dollar is a medium-term low. That the 9-year appreciation of the renminbi is over, and that we are going to now move into a much more volatile environment. That would also suggest that the Chinese manufacturing sector, which has been under incredible pressure, and not least because of higher wage demands and the pressure that's been put on them by the strengthening currency, well, they're going to get a bit of a shot in the arm, because they're going to at least see their competitiveness stabilize. And if we see some additional weakness, then obviously their competitiveness in the currency, their competitiveness will improve. But in the industrial metal complex, it was a copper that took the brunt of selling. In fact, the remaining industrial metals were pretty much unchanged on the day. And just before the audio, I just checked the live prices on the LME website, and really, they were all down on the day, but not in any kind of dynamic way. But copper was down in a dynamic way. It was down 13 cents on the COMEX contract. It's coming back down now to touch, to test the $3 area, $3 to the pound. Well, copper is by far the most liquid of the industrial metals, and when one compares it to the other industrial metals, it's quite different. You have in copper, where the price has been sustained at reasonably high levels for much of the last few years, whereas you look at nickel or tin or tin is a bit of an exception, but certainly nickel and lead and zinc and indeed aluminium. Well, prices there have got base formation characteristics. They've already experienced deep declines. And of course, copper is also by far the most liquid of the industrial metals. So that is where people have been expressing their view that the default in China is, or the first corporate default in history, is a meaningful effect, and that it could represent an issue for the economy more generally if the problem is seen to snowball. What is in the banking sector's favor is that the reserve ratios are at approximately 20%, so they do have cash. How big this problem is likely to be is going to become clear, I think, probably in the next while. Well, in the rest of Asia, Japan is... the fate of the Japan stock market is still very much tied to the yen. And the yen weakened over the last 3 days. And it's now weaker. The dollar is pushed up to 103 again. The second section, which has been a lead indicator for the Japanese stock market, has also begun to firm. And when one looks at the Nikkei over a five-year chart, then the progression of high reaction lows remains intact and then continues to find support in the region of the 200-day moving average. So that's generally consistent with a consolidation, and that we can anticipate that the Japanese market will do better in here. Well, the currency market valuation has crept into the lexicon of the media over the last 6 months, and not least because Japan has embarked upon its quantitative easing and is directly targeting the value of the currency. The fact that an economic center of gravity in Asia has been so aggressive in attempting to devalue its currency has upset the equilibrium within the region more generally. It's hard to imagine that the Chinese would be even contemplating a weaker currency if they weren't looking at competing with Japan in terms of exports. But with both China and Japan having an interest in a weaker currency, well, that really increases the potential for other countries in the region to attempt to devalue their currencies, or at least to arrest their appreciation. Well, in all of that, one then has to look at the currencies that are not at risk of devaluation. Well, one is Vietnam, and the Vietnamese stock market has been among the better performers this year. But the dong was devalued aggressively about 3 years ago and has been pretty steady since. And a lot of the reforms that needed to be put in place have been put in place. So Vietnam is back on a recovery trajectory. And more recently, India devalued the rupee. Our investors devalued it for them in the middle of last year, so that we now have a new central banker, and he has made no secret of the fact that he is looking to stabilize the rupee. And so far, they've done a pretty good job of that. Well, the devaluation of the currency certainly improved the competitiveness of India's vibrant services exporters. So when one looks at some of the ADRs, and obviously those are in US dollars or in pounds, then we can see that you have rounding characteristics, which are generally consistent with accumulation, and that, for example, Dr. Reddy is showing quite a lot of commonality with other generic drug makers, so that these are the types of companies that are benefiting from the new equilibrium at a lower level for the currency. Well, that would suggest that India's competitiveness has improved, and despite the fact that it has received really quite a lot of bad press over the last few years, and that negative sentiment reached a pinnacle with the devaluation of the currency, that really, that's perhaps that there is the potential here that India may start to move back into the good graces of international investors as other countries are lining up to put pressure on their respective currencies. And it is interesting that the banking sector, which has been lagging, posted really a very large and impressive upward dynamic in here today, and that the Nifty pushed on to new high ground. Investors may also be starting to price in the potential that India is going to elect Narendra Modi as its next prime minister, and that would certainly be attractive from a market perspective. He got a bump in the polls in here today, and that would suggest that people are starting to price in the potential that he is going to win that election. Well, when we look a little bit more widely and look at some other asset classes, then gold prices have been rallying for the last month, and they were a bit weaker in here today, not least because of the favorable report that came out of the US in terms of growth and job figures, and the fact that some of the large retailers are adding headcount, and that people that even the government is adding new workers. Well, that would suggest that the growth trajectory for the US is still very much intact, that having been the first into recession, that the US is leading the major economies out of recession. Well, as a hedge against a worst case scenario, gold pulled back by approximately $20 in here today, but retraced the vast majority of that decline and was down only 10. Platinum was only down 2, and palladium was up on the day, although a little bit off its high. Silver was as low as 2075 and rallied least of the four precious metals. Well, what we're seeing in the precious metal sector is that medium-term lows have been found. We're still in a volatile environment. We have some fundamental drivers in both platinum and palladium that are helping to support those prices. And in here this week, palladium broke its medium-term progression of lower rally highs, not least because Norilsk Nickel is the majority producer of palladium, and as a Russian share, the supply of the commodity may be put under some pressure, considering just how tense relationships are with Russia and the West at present. Broadly speaking, the continuous commodity index has been surging higher. It's been led higher by the soft commodities, and soybeans was stronger by an additional 19 cents in here today, and corn was up by 8, having really retraced yesterday's decline. The sugar market was a little bit weaker in here today, but what we're seeing in most of the soft commodities is recovery trajectories, and that it's been coffee and sugar have been leading to the upside in terms of the recovery, whereas cocoa has been pretty firm throughout, and that orange juice and cotton are now starting to get investor interest. So people are starting to look on them as potential catch-up candidates, although they're not susceptible to the same level or the same types of fundamentals. And most of the European markets in here today were a little bit weaker. The DAX in particular was down by 2%. Well, what we've seen is that the Mario Draghi came out yesterday and said that the deflation problem in Europe was contained and that they were expecting inflation to improve. Of course, the ECB has got an inflation target of 2%. They don't want to see it higher than that, but they'd certainly like to see it a bit more than we've seen of late. Well, that also suggests that the ECB is going to be less inclined to continue to pump additional liquidity into the banking sector. So what we have in a number of European markets are short-term overbought conditions and the potential for some reversions to the mean has increased in here. It is notable, though, that what we are also seeing in... Well, there is a massive divergence in performance in the vast majority of stock markets, but perhaps most acute is the outperformance of the IPO sector. If you look at the Bloomberg IPO index, then companies have been doing really very well indeed in the year after their initial public offering. Well, that's generally late in the cycle type stuff. The incentive to list your company is generally when you can get the best price for it, and that's generally when people are paying less attention to balance sheets. So Facebook paid $19 billion 2 weeks ago for WhatsApp, and the queue of new IPOs reaching market and fetching pretty attractive prices is increasing, and not least when you see that there's a considerable number of companies doing quite similar offering quite similar services. That would suggest that the sector is ripe for consolidation, and that when you see that there are a large number of social media or coupon type businesses being IPO'd at the same time, well, one can pretty easily conclude that they're not all going to survive. So when you see that the IPO sector is outperforming, it's generally not something that persists into the medium or long term, but rather that it is generally indicative of late in the cycle activity. The other important characteristic of this market is that previous laggards, if you are reasonably late in the cycle and you look at the valuations of the wider market and you see that they're in the high teens for a number of indices, then value investors will start to search around for things that haven't yet moved. We've seen a substantial rally in Middle Eastern markets in the last few months, not least because they were among the geographical sectors that hadn't rallied at all in the last 3 years. So they've been doing very well indeed, and they continue to attract investor interest. What we're now also starting to see is that cyclical sectors, not least in the resources sector, are attracting interest. So copper was down pretty heavily in here today. But interestingly, there were a number of the miners weren't. Certainly BHP and Rio pulled back pretty sharply. But what we've seen is that some of the smaller companies that are a bit more, easier to move from the perspective of larger investors, have broken progressions of lower rally highs, and we are starting to see them push back above their 200-day moving averages. That would suggest that we're moving out of this deteriorating price environment for cyclical shares, and that the risks are more than likely to be to the upside. Nevertheless, they are going to have occasional pullbacks, which, provided progressions of higher reaction lows remain intact, can be viewed as buying opportunities. Well, the bond markets peaked last year. And when you think about that in terms of treasuries, that was the end of a more than 30-year bull market. But major bull markets don't end with a whimper. They end with a war going on between supply and demand. And we're seeing exactly that now in government bond yields. Well, the low in yields was about a year ago. And we had a substantial rally in yields and deterioration in price. The total return index on U.S. Treasuries broke its uptrend, and that was a 30-year uptrend. Well, when the most consistent trend in the world becomes inconsistent, it is generally a signal that we need to adjust our perspective. Well, the conclusion then is that the bull market in government bonds is over, but that we haven't had significant declines. People certainly considered that they experienced profit erosion last year, and to one extent or another, people will have largely forgotten about that as we come around to this year. But what we have seen is that yields have stabilized at a higher level. The Fed is engaged in tapering its monetary policy, and they'll probably be finished that tapering by the time we get to September. Quite when they begin to raise interest rates subsequent to that is anybody's guess. But provided the economy continues on a positive trajectory, then there's no reason to suspect that they're going to do anything other than attempt to normalize monetary policy. Well, the types of companies that have done best from quantitative easing are those that were able to borrow at the lowest absolute levels that they've had in generations, if not ever. And companies have used that additional capital to refinance debt or pay down debt and to buy back their own shares and increase their dividends. Well, buybacks have become a significant driver in terms of the four-year bull market. Anything that happens to jeopardize the ability of companies to source cheap funding and buy back their own shares is going to have a meaningful effect on the stock market. So monitoring the buyback achievers index will be time well spent. As we head into the weekend, perhaps the things to watch in the next week will be the potential for some mean reversion in some of the stock markets. Short-term oversold condition has been replaced by short-term overbought condition. And also watch the performance of the industrial metals, because that will be more an indication of investor perceptions of how China is doing, rather than listening to what the Chinese are telling us. And also watch the Chinese banks. They're really at the front line of this problem, but they've already experienced deep declines. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.